Just Parsha and the question and answers, but this week the question and answer that arrived was a question, welcome, from the Parsha, so we're in good shape. So the first piece I want to do with you is the top right. I hope there's enough sources. Here's an extra one. The top right, and it's from the beginning of the Parsha. The pasuk says, "Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, vayelech Harana." Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva. He goes towards Haran. He's of course running away from Esav, fleeing for his life. Vayifga b'makom. So that's the word we're going to leave undefined for now. Vayifga b'makom. Vayalan sham kiva shemesh, and he rested there because the sun had set. Vayikach me'avnei makom, vayasa me'rashosav, and he took from the stones of that place. And he placed them around his head. And he slept there. And then the psukim continue to describe the famous dream that Yaakov has, the dream of the ladder and the angels. So the question is, what does this word, vayifga b'makom, mean? So what do you think? What is vayifga b'makom? You could move the talus back. What does vayifga b'makom mean?
Perchance.
He met perchance. Okay.
Not perchance.
Not perchance. Because that's one possibility. What else? What other places that you... Anyone think of another place where you have the word vayifga in Tanakh? It's a hard question, I know.
With the jars and the angel? No.
I don't think so. So let's talk about modern Hebrew. What does a pigua mean? Yeah.
Like
yeah. Al tifga bi. That's a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. What does al tifga bi mean?
Don't be afraid of me.
Don't attack me, right? Vayifga, I think, usually means to approach in a hostile manner. It implies violence. Now, let's look at Rashi. Vayifga b'makom pirshu lashon tfila. So Rashi, quoting Chazal, says that it's a lashon of tefillah. This is Yaakov's takana. Kimo ve'altiv gabi. Ve'lamadnu shetikein tefillas arvis. And we learn from here, we derive from here, that Yaakov Avinu instituted tefillas arvis. Right? We know that each of the three avos, Chazal tell us, instituted a tefillah. Yaakov's tefillah is arvis. So the question is, why this lashon? Why is vayifga a lashon of tefillah? Vayifga has the connotation of hostile, of almost even attack, right? Vayifga bo vayamisehu. He attacked him and he killed him. If vayifga means attack, so why would this be a lashon of tefillah? So that's question number one. Question two is, it's very interesting, we know that each of the avos were misaken tefillos. Avraham and Yitzchak's tefillah are obligatory. One must daven shachar and mincha. Tefillas arvis, the Gemara tells us, is rishus, is optional. Now, practically speaking, at least men do have to daven ma'ariv, either because even though it was originally instituted as something that's optional, people accepted it upon themselves as a chova, or perhaps even when we say optional, optional doesn't mean you could do it if you want or you don't want to, but it means if there's something else that's pressing, you could do the other thing. But one way or the other, it's clear from the halacha that it is somehow a lower level obligation than shachar and mincha. So the question is why? Now, you could say that if tefillah is keneged karbanos, that would make sense, because shachar is the keneged the tamid shel shachar, which is obligatory. Minchas keneged tamid shel ben arbaim, which is obligatory. Mariv is keneged haktars chalavim de'evarim, the fats that they would burn on a mizbeach in the nighttime. And technically speaking, you don't have to do that. If there are fats, they have to be burnt, and you can't leave them past the overnight. But it's not obligatory in the same sense as tamid shel shachar, tamid shel ben arbaim. So that would make sense. But if you assume, like the other opinion in Chazal, that it's not tefillos keneged karbanos tiknum, but tefillos avos tiknum, which is what we're explaining now, that the avos were misakein tefillos. So why is the tefillah of Mariv second class? Right? Why is shachar and mincha obligatory? Mariv second class. So, I once heard the following approach from Rav Moshe Shapiro. Zatzal. He said that even though the Lashon of Ifgah means to attack, the truth is that we sometimes find tefillah that is almost like an attack. L'mashal, Moshe Rabbeinu, when davening for Klal Yisrael after the Chet HaEgel, Chazal say, he said, Eini mini chachad shetimcho lahem. I'm not letting go until you forgive them. Ki'ilu kaviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe takes Hashem's arm and twists it and says, you know, I'm not letting go unless you forgive them. Choni Amagal famously threatens God, steps into the circle, says, I'm not leaving until there's rain. So we do find places where tefillah is almost a threat, almost hostile, almost an attack. Well, when is that appropriate? So it's an appropriate, not normally perhaps, but when a person's whole existence is threatened. Let's think about what's going on with Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu is running for his life from Esav. He doesn't know where he's going. He's going to Lavan. Who knows what kind of guy that is. His whole existence is under threat. He doesn't know. And that, by the way, is the Lashon of Makom. Maybe we'll have a chance to see that. But it's dark. He's alone in the world. He feels totally vulnerable. He has no money, no assets. He doesn't know where he's going. He's running for his life. He's all alone. It's night. That is when this type of tefillah is appropriate. When a person feels like their whole existence is threatened, they can turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the knowledge and the awareness that there's no one else. Ein mi sheyimale chasroni elohu. I'm entirely dependent upon him. Now, we're always entirely dependent upon him. But when you're coming to that place from a feeling of absolute vulnerability, so then this type of tefillah is appropriate. When Moshe Rabbeinu says, Eini mini chachat shetimcho lahem, he's praying because God has threatened to destroy the entire Jewish people. When Choni HaMagal does this, he's saying this because there's a drought. There's nothing to eat. And when Yaakov Avinu is running for his life and feels all alone, so then he too davens with a tefillah of pigua, vayifga b'makom. Vayifga b'makom. And that's the yesod here. And that's why tefillas arvus is rishus. Because you can never legislate or mandate that form of tefillah. If it comes naturally, fine. In the right time, in the right place. And that's why it's a tefillah of night. That's why it's a tefillah of ma'ariv. Because ma'ariv, nighttime, is a reflection of that feeling of vulnerability, of aloneness. We don't necessarily feel that so much at night. Because we don't really experience darkness and the like. But certainly, if you're alone in the dark, that's when you feel it. And that is, in a sense, the ideal tefillas ma'ariv. And that might be the idea of vayifga b'makom. B'makom here, pashup shat, means the place, maybe a specific place, a special place, the makom ha'mikdash. The Chazal say that it's also a reference to God. We refer to God as makom. Mekomo shel olam, ve'ein ha'olam mekomo. So when is it that we use that name for God, of Makom? So the Rav has a very interesting idea. The Rav says, first of all, the usage of the word Makom to refer to God reflects a certain level of immanence. We feel Hashem in our place. We connect Him in a particularly powerful way. And he said, let's look at the places where we use the word Makom to refer to God. What places can you think of?
Kaddish.
Savelus, right? Right. When we do nidah ma'abelim, we say Hamakom Minachem Eschem. That's what we meant. Yeah. Hamakom Minachem Eschem B'Sel Shav Le'Tzion Shlaim. Good. One else. Okay, but that's again pshut. That's not pashup shad. Is he means the place? We're talking about Har Moriah, right? Where we use it to God. The Seder, okay, awesome. The Seder, Baruch Hamakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Hamakom. Good. What else? Achenu, good. Achenu, Hamakom, Yirah. They're all songs, right? Good. And where's Sukkos? I don't know about Sukkos. Maybe I just. The only other place I could think of is right at the beginning of Yom Kippur. Al das ha-makom, right, the first words of the tefillah on Yom Kippur, we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu makom. These are all times when we feel an especial closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's think about it. One is Achenu, right? Beis Tzara, like Yaakov Avinu. A person is able to daven in a way when they totally feel threatened and vulnerable and in a place of tzara like no other time. And it's an opportunity. We don't look for these opportunities. But it's an opportunity to feel Hashem's presence like no other way. Right? Yom Kippur, without a doubt, is a time of closeness, a time where we feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. The Seder, in a very different way, is a time of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And likewise at a Shiva house, at a time of loss of a close one, close relative, and the like. Okay, so that's the first part I wanted to share with you tonight. The second one, we'll do the last one now, and then we'll do the middle ones, depending on how much time we have, which is the topic of Maaser Kesafim. Now, that was actually a requested question, some of the halachos of Maaser, but it relates to this week's Parsha. How does Maaser Kesafim relate to the Parsha? No? Well, maybe, but much more explicit than that. Yes, Vayidar Yaakov Neder Lemor. Yaakov, right after this pasuk, Yaakov is fleeing from Esav. He davens to Hashem. He says that Kol Asher Titen Li Asra Asrenu Lach. He davens to Hashem for safety, for protection. And he says, I'm going to give Maaser. Kol Asher Titen Li Asra Asrenu Lach. I'm going to give Maaser. The truth is, it's quite a fascinating thing, but we find among all the Avos, Chazal find a place where all the Avos gave Maaser. Anyone want to try to figure it out? Where do you have it with Avram Avinu? No. Vayitein lo ma'aser mikol, right? After the battle of the five kings and the four kings, right? He meets up with Malki Tzedek. Vayitein lo ma'aser mikol, he gives him Maaser. And where do you have it with Yitzchak? You have it with Mea Sharim in the last week's Parsha, right? So the fact that we find Chazal, maybe Al Derech Remez, Be'asmacht, and the like, but that Chazal find a Remez that all three Avos gave Maaser is a clear indication of how important Maaser is. That we see it in our roots, in our genes, in our DNA, that even the Avos gave Maaser. Now, is there actually a Mekor for Maaser in the Torah? So, we know that min HaTorah, there is agricultural tithes. There's Truma, Maaser Rishon, Truma is given to the Kohen from agricultural products, and Maaser Rishon is given to the Levi, and then there's Maaser Sheni, and there's Maaser Ani, it's Trumas Maaser, it's also Maaser Behema from animals, from certain types of livestock. But there's no explicit pasuk that says that you must give 10% of your income to charity. We have these Ramazim, but there's no explicit pasuk. Now there is a Remez that Chazal say to this idea of Maaser Kesafim. If you turn to page 2, it's a pasuk from Dvarim, Perek Yedaled, pasuk Chav Beis, Aser to Aser is kol tvuas aracha yotzei hasadeh shana shana. So you shall take Maaser from all of your grain that you earn each year. So Chazal say a couple of things here. First of all, Aser to Aser, Aser b'shvil shetis asher. You want to become wealthy, take Maaser. People think that if they give less charity, they'll have more money for themselves. The opposite is true. Aser b'shvil shetis asher. Chazal also say, this is a tanchuma on that pasuk, aser ta aser, right below the next source. Aser b'shvil shetis asher. Aser kadei shelo titchaser. Give Maaser so you get rich. Give Maaser so that you don't lose your money. Remez l'mafrishe yamim. Lahafrish echad min asara le'omle Torah. So this is a remez. Now the word remez is an important word here, because remez doesn't necessarily mean that we're dealing with a din de oraisa. It might be an asmachta, a allusion to an idea. Though that's not always clear. The Ramban has a whole list of things, places where the Gemara uses the word remez, because it's not explicit in the Pasuk, but is referring to a din de oraisa, like a remez liyichud min haTorah. Pashtus in the Gemara, yichud is an iser de oraisa, yichud with arayos, and still the Gemara refers to its sources of remez. So the word remez is inconclusive, but certainly sometimes might indicate that this isn't a din de oraisa. Remez. So this Pasuk, aser taser, is a remez, a hint, l'mafrisheyam, so those are people that are going sailing. These are businessmen, basically, people that go and engage in commerce. So we're not talking about agricultural produce, but business income. Lehafrish echad me'asara, to take off one-tenth. So here we have a remez, maybe deraisa, maybe derabanan, for taking meiser from all income. In other words, not just agricultural income, but even business income. And here we have a very interesting point, la'omle Torah, to those who toil in Torah. So this indicates that at least the ideal, or there's a special focus on Torah studiers with respect to the distribution of meiser. Now, this source is, as we said, not conclusive, and among the poskim, there are those who say, and even some Rishonim who say, that Meiser Ksafim is a din deraisa, based off of this pasuk of Aser Taser, and the fact that we see it in Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, though we don't learn halachos from the Avos. There are those that say it's a din derabanan, and this pasuk is an asmachta, an allusion. And there are those that say it's not actually a din derabanan in the sense of a formal chova, but a minhag that Klal Yisrael has kept for a very long time. And that's because we don't find explicitly in the Gemara and Shas that there's a explicit chova. And the poskim are in disagreement about which way we poskim. There are some poskim that support each view. Many poskim think that it's a minhag. Now, minhag isn't something that necessarily should be treated lightly, but we'll see in a moment that there's certain practical applications of the fact that this might be a minhag. So let's take a look at the Rambam above, which is back on page 1. The Rambam here is discussing staka, and the Rambam tells us, and this Rambam is more or less paskind in the Shulchan Aruch, how much staka should one give? So lefima shechaser ha'ani, ata mitzuva liten lo, at least ideally, a person must give the amount that the poor person needs. If a poor person needs a certain amount, let's say somebody comes to me, knocks on my door, and he says, I'm here in America because I need a certain surgery, and they don't perform the surgery in Israel, and therefore it's going to cost $250,000, and that's why I'm here at your door. So how much does that person need? He needs $250,000. So seemingly, if I have $250,000, I have to give him. Why? Because the Pasuk says, De machsoro asher yachsar lo. With respect to the obligation to give tzedakah, the Pasuk says you should give what he lacks. This guy lacks $250,000. Assuming that he's telling the truth, which is also an important halacha. We're going to, I don't know if we'll have time tonight, but there are halachos with respect to that. One does, to some degree, have a responsibility to do what you can to verify the veracity of the need, especially since we all have limited amounts of staka that we could give. So you want to make sure you get the most bang for your buck. The halacha is, if somebody comes and tells you he's hungry, so you don't try to verify. Because there's a story in the Gemara, somebody once said, I'm hungry, and the person decided to investigate. By the time he investigated and found out the guy was hungry, the guy was dead. So a certain basic gift, especially somebody says, I'm hungry, you don't investigate. Better safe than sorry, even though we're certainly aware that there are... So it's a good question. again, a topic we're not going to talk about tonight is certain cases where there's good reason to assume the person is a fraud or a panhandler or the like, or other cases where you feel that giving the person won't help the person. Give to somebody, maybe they even are hungry, but they're a drug addict, so giving them money is not going to help them get better. They won't even use the money to buy food. They'll buy more drugs. So there are definitely tricky questions of that nature that, again, we're not going to, tonight we're just going to look at some of the more basic questions. Another time perhaps we can explore this more fully. But I generally don't give to panhandlers on the subways, especially when they have a whole act and the like. It's a tricky question. It's very touched. My father told me this. He came to our house for Shabbos, and he took the subway here, and he said he saw a lady by the subway who had a sign saying, "I'm hungry." And he sort of passed her and didn't give her anything. And then he got up the stairs and he left and he thought, "I should go back." And he went back and he gave her a dollar. So, sometimes our Rachmanim, Jews are Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomli Chasadim. And it's important to make very careful calculations when it comes to giving staka. Sometimes you also should follow your heart. But again, these are important questions to consider. But anyway, the Rambam says, so according to that which he lacks, you must give him. Now, the truth is the Shach limits this halacha. The Shach writes, this is only for someone who's mizbayesh lachzer al psachim. In other words, the guy, again, he needs $250,000 for surgery, and he's unable to go around collecting it. So therefore, the onus falls upon you. But someone who is over mimakom lamakom, so then you alone are not responsible. So even if you do happen to have $250,000 in your pocket, you might not have to give him because the responsibility isn't just upon you, it's upon the community. If, however, you're in a situation where you alone can help the person, then perhaps if you can, you must. Now, that is what the Rambam writes. So the Rambam gives some examples. Im ein lo ksus mechasimo, so a person doesn't have what to wear, so you give him clothing. Ein lo klei bayis konen lo, he doesn't have furniture, you buy them for him. Im ein lo isha masino, so, right? Help somebody get married, that's also tzedakah. It's not limited to money. Vim haisa isha masino so leish. So if it's a male, you help him find a female, and the reverse. Afilo Hayadarko shel zeh ani lerkov al hasus the eved ratz lefanav. It says demach savasher yachsala, what he lacks. If he feels lacking, because he used to be a very wealthy person, he used to drive a Rolls Royce, and now he lost all of his money. So he has a Chevy, but he feels terrible driving a Chevy. How if I should drive a Chevy? But this guy feels like rotten. So, because he feels chaser, then you have a chiyuv to help him feel better. Now, maybe the better way to help him is to teach him how to live a more simple life. But maybe it's also to buy him a Lexus. Now, obviously, in terms of prioritizing tzedakah, giving the guy a Lexus will go well beyond, will be well below people that are actually hungry or needy of more basic things. But at least fundamentally, it's telling us a very important yesod in terms of hilchos tzedakah, which is we don't necessarily follow objective criteria. And one very important factor is how the person feels. I once heard a shiur from Rabbi Berkowitz in Eretz Yisrael, in which he said that he remembers when he was a young yeshiva, younger man, he just got married, he was learning in the mir, living with his wife in Eretz Yisrael, and they lived a very simple life. And they couldn't afford a fridge, so they had an ice box. And somebody comes knocking at their door and says, "I need money, I'm so poor, I can't even afford a fridge, I have to use an ice box." So intuitively, he was about to say, oh, let me show you my kitchen. But then he realized that, look, you know, I don't feel chaser. I'm very happy with a nice box without a kitchen. But this guy obviously does. So I'm chayv to give him, and he gave him something. So that's a very important yesod in staka. Fine. So that's the Rambam. Now, all that is assuming you could afford it. But what if you can't? So skip a little. Bahani v'shal de'machsaro ve'en yad hanosein maseges. Somebody goes ahead. He comes and he asks me for the $250,000 for a surgery. And, I'm sorry. I don't have $250,000 to give you. Right? So you can't fulfill the shear of de'machsaro asher yachsarlo. So what do? Nosein lo k'fi haseges yadu. So you give based off of what you could afford. V'kama. How much? Ad chamishis nechasav mitzvah min amuvchar. Ideally, somebody who's generous gives 20%. Ve'achad me'asara v'nechasav beinoni. Somebody who gives 10%, which of course we know is a lot, is beinoni. Pachos mikan ein ra, less than 10% is stingy. Liolam lo yimna atzmo mishlisha shekel v'shana. Don't give less than a third of a shekel per year, which is a very tiny amount. V'chol anosim pachos mizeh. Lokim, it says stuck. If you don't give even that small amount, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Vafilu aniyam is parnes minat tzedaka, chayv litein tzedaka l'acher. Even someone who is supported by charity has to give tzedaka, which is a fascinating idea. Not a lot, just that minimum amount. A person should always be a giver and never be exclusively a taker. And therefore, even if you yourself are supported by charity, you must still give tzedaka. And if you don't, a person can get into the habit of becoming a taker. And lose that dignity that we have to give. Sometimes we have to take as well, but even when we're taking, we have to give. It's a fascinating idea. Now, let's talk about some of the practical halachos. So, one of the most common questions is, to what should I give miser? And specifically, the question is, does it have to be given to poor people? Or what if I think there are other wonderful, worthy causes, but these are not necessarily giving money to the poor? They're giving money to other wonderful ideas, wonderful things. Now, first of all, a lot of these causes, even though they're not directly giving money to the poor, do involve supporting the poor in a sort of indirect way. But let's say something is not about giving money to the poor. So here at first glance, we have a machlokas rishonim, and seemingly a dispute between the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach, which you have on page 2, we'll see perhaps it's not necessarily a dispute. But we'll start with the Shulchan Aruch. You see over here where it says Shulchan Aruch, Yerodeya Hilchos Tzedaka Simen Reish Mem Tes. Ve'en la'asos b'maiser shelo davar mitzvah. A person should not use his maiser to do a mitzvah type thing. Kigon, Neiros Levesa Knesses, Oshar Dvar Mitzvah, Rak Yitnenu Le'anim. A person wishes to give money to support the electricity in the synagogue. Right? That's an important need. We're all sitting now in a synagogue, and there's light, which is very helpful. We would have a hard time having this year in the dark. And for that matter, there's heat. That costs money. If somebody wasn't paying the bills, there would be no light and no heat. So it's a very good thing to support your local synagogue so that they could have light and heat. Well, can you use miser funds from that? So seemingly, the Shulchan Aruch here is saying, no, what's this based off of? A Maril. So let's look at the Maril. That's the next source. Maril writes, V'noag miser shalahem la'asos neos v'hanosnim, sorry, miser shalahem la'asos neos la'adlakas lahadlikam b'shasat tefillah. Those who gave from their miser money candles to light during shul, shelo kedinos, and they're not acting appropriately. Ki ha'miser shayach l'aniyim, because miser is dafka meant to give to the poor. You should dafka give to the poor. Meaning to say that, of course, you should give money to your shul for the electricity, but not your miser money. V'yitin la'matzdaka. Shachar, Kadesh Yuchalik, no Tzarchal Yom Tov, right? Give them money in the morning so they could buy their needs. Okay, that's what we need for now. So, it sounds like from here that Meiser is meant to be exclusively given to the poor people, and this seems to be what the Shulchan Aruch paskins. Now take a look at the Shach, not the next source, but the one afterwards. And the Shach is actually going on the same line in the Shulchan Aruch. Ve'en lasos Meiser shelo. Marshal v'adrisha kasvu b'shem tshuvas ma'ram d'chol mitzvah shetava liyado. Kigon Leos Balbris, O Lahachnes Chasan Vekala, Lachopa, Vechia Gavna, Vechain Likno Svarim, Lilmod Bahen, Ula Shilan Lacherim, Lilmod Bahem, Im Lohaya Yacholus Biado, the Lohaya Oso Sa Mitzvah, Yachol Liknos Menamaiser. Wow. See over here, it's a Tshuva from Maram, Mi Rottenberg, that you're allowed to use Meiser to do a mitzvah. Now some of these might be poor related, but some of them aren't. Leos Balbris. I don't know, I guess they had a custom that sometimes you give money and you get to be the tzaddik. Maybe that's to poor people, I'm not sure. But let's take the case of a Sfarim library, a lending library. So, it says over here that you're allowed to use your Meiser fund to buy Sfarim for a public lending library, not necessarily for your own Sfarim. Now, this too might have been for, you could say that's for a mitzvah, for poor people to use. But the impression that you get from here is that it need not be limited to poor people. Any mitzvah that you do that you would not have done otherwise. Meaning to say, I may not use my Meiser money for a mitzvah that I would otherwise have to do. That also is found in the Maril in the source above. It says, for example, you can't use Meiser money for Matanos Lanim on Purim. Why? Because you have to do that anyway. Right? So even if it's going to poor people, you can't do it. If you want to give beyond the minimal share of Matanos Lanim, then you could use Meiser money. But the minimal share of Matanos Lanim, whatever that is, you can't use Meiser money. You can't use Meiser money. So the Shach over here seems to be saying that if it's for a mitzvah that you would have otherwise done, right, like Neros Hanukkah or buying a lulav and esrog or whatever it is, you would have done this mitzvah anyway, so then you may not use Meiser money to pay for that mitzvah. But if it's a mitzvah that you would not have otherwise done, then you may. Now, the question is this consistent with the other Maharil, which we just saw, or is it a dispute? According to the Rama, I think in the Shulchan Aruch, it has to be given dafka to poor people. And the Shach says, according to the Maharam, it doesn't have to be given to poor people. So if you take a look at the Ber Heitev, which is quoted here in the Pischei Tshuva below, he writes like this. Even though at first it seems like the two, the Maril and the Maharam, are disagreeing with each other, you could say that they're not arguing. How so? Dafka mitzvah shechai v'lav hachi. When the Maril said that you can't use money to pay for the candles in a shul, so that's a mitzvah that you would otherwise have to do. What do you mean? Why do I have to give money to pay for the candles in a shul? The answer is because you're part of a community. If you live in a shul, in a community, one of the responsibilities of all members of a community is to support a shul, because that's a communal need. Nowadays we call that shul membership. And as a member of this community, that's part of your responsibility to make sure that there are candles or lights or electricity and heat in the shul. And therefore, since this is something that you would otherwise be obligated to do, that's why he's saying you can't use your Meiser money to buy candles for the shul. It's not saying that all mitzvos are precluded. It's saying that since this is something that you are obligated to do anyway, namely, as a member of the community to support the shul, making sure that it has light and heat, so then you can't use your money, Meiser money. But let's say you're giving extra candles for the shul, right? Everybody in the community, you know, they're the dues. That's the basic. It's what everybody has to give. And you want to make an extra donation for candles in the shul. So since that's not obligatory, then you could, even though it's not going directly to poor people. That's his first resolution. And therefore, the two rulings, the ruling of the Maharil and the ruling of the Maharam, don't disagree with each other. The first ruling of the Maharil says you could use it for mitzvos if it's not a mitzvah, would agree that you could use it for mitzvos if it's not a mitzvah you'd otherwise have to do. So that's one resolution. The difficulty with that resolution is that the Maharil does say it's because it's Meister Shayach L'Aniyim, which sounds like it's exclusively not to be for mitzvos, only for Aniyim. So then he gives a different answer, the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, well, maybe that first Maharil is for somebody who is already given to poor people. He writes, let's read it together. Ach, mikol makom in kan machlokas, de maril virama mairi shehinhig gimel panim lahafresh meiser me revach shelo velisito la'anim. Someone who has a regular practice, for example, they've given three times their meiser to poor people, so they should continue that practice. And they shouldn't all of a sudden switch their designation from poor people to other very good needs, but still not the poor people. Because they've done that. Veshuv koma sheyifrosh havi memeilo l'aniyim. Once you've designated three times your miser money to give to poor people, and you didn't say something like, I am hereby not establishing this as a Kabbalah or as a minhag, so then you should continue to do so. V'lav kol kimine liknos mimenu ner lebeis haknes. Therefore, you don't have the authority to redesignate your miser funds to communal needs. Afilu einu mechuyav ben. Aval im yad b'tchilz hanagos of la'afresh miser k'safim hisnesh yuchol la'asos mimena dvar mitzvah. But if initially when you started giving miser, you specified that you're going to be able to do mitzvos with it, or that's in fact what you did, presumably. In other words, the first time you gave miser, you didn't give it to poor people, you gave it to some valid communal endeavor that's not poor people, so then you may continue to do so. So how do we paskin? How do we paskin on this shaila? Because as I said, this shaila is really very, very common, because a lot of people would like to give their miser money not exclusively to poor people. So the poskim basically say, though again there's some disagreement here, that the best thing to do is when you start giving miser to specify that you don't wish to limit your miser exclusively to poor people. And again, if that's what you're doing in practice, presumably you don't have to specify, but it's best to specify. And therefore, that would allow you to follow the ruling of the Shach and to give it to other causes, as long as these are causes that you're not generally obligated to do. So we mentioned shul membership, for example. Can you use a miser to pay for shul membership? There's actually an interesting dispute in the poskim. Rabbi Shachter thinks you can't. Why? Because, like we said before, this isn't obligatory. This is obligatory. Everybody who lives in a community should be a member of a shul or support a shul. Other poskim say, no, it's not formally obligatory. In a world that, you know, you weren't allowed to enter the shul unless you paid membership, so then you should use it for membership. But no shul is going to turn you away. The shuls might request membership, but lamaisa, they're happy to let you daven without it, and therefore, in that sense, it's optional, and therefore you could use miser money. Now, again, we could talk a lot more about miser, but I want to go on to some other ideas in the parasha, but I'll say one last comment, which is, I think, very relevant for many of us, which is while one should give miser, whether it's a deraisa, a derabanan, or a minhag, if a person can't afford to give miser, then they're exempt from giving miser. And a lot of people at certain stages in their lives can't afford to give miser. What do we mean can't afford? If they gave miser, their basic personal needs won't be met. Now, a person has to... So first of all, if you're in such a stage, so that's fine. You don't feel bad that you're not giving miser, because that's where you're holding, and maybe one day you'll make more money and you'll be able to give miser. But if that's where you are now, you don't have to give miser. You should always give tzedakah, like we said. A person should never say, I'm not going to give any tzedakah. But miser is a lot. And for many people, whether they're still students, or they're just getting off, or they have a large family and young children, or whatever it is, if they're in a state where they can't afford to give Meiser, so then they're exempt from Meiser. Okay. Just one or two questions, because I want to go on to some other things in the parsha. Yeah.
If it's a minhag, how are there so many like halachos?
It's a very good question. It's a very interesting question, because as I said, many poskim assume it's a minhag, and yet when you look at many of the tshuvos on the topic, you see that they address this question like tshuvos. You know, Rav Moshe has a number of tshuvos on Meiser. Like Rav Moshe has a tshuva that you could deduct from your income the amount that you pay to tax, not all taxes, not real estate tax or sales tax, because you didn't really need to buy those things and pay the tax, but things like income tax, where you don't even ever see the money, just take them out of your salary, then you can. So you have these tshuvos. So the answer is that that whether it's a minhag or a halacha, there are parameters and rules the poskim assume. And minhagim have rules. Those rules, if it's a minhag, might be governed by the way in which the practice has been accepted by the community. But there still could be rules. Minhagim are not optional things that, you know, sometimes people like think of a minhag as, you know, like having chicken soup Friday night. It's my minhag to have a chicken soup Friday night. No, that's not a minhag. I mean, it's a nice thing. But if somebody liked vegetable soup better, I think it would be okay. That's not the begeder shmam bini musar vicha val titosh tarasimecha. Don't tell my mother. And even those types of minhagim are, you know, I think they shouldn't always be treated lightly. There's something to them. But that's not what we're talking about. A minhag. A minhag is something that's has certain rules. Not everything counts as a minhag, and it's governed by certain rules. Sometimes those rules aren't as rigorous as things that are halacha, but they too have parameters and practices and the like.
So if it's also a minhag, then in terms of what we just said about, you know, when you first start giving meiser, you should do whatever you took upon yourself. Wouldn't there be like a family minhag then? In that
not sense? Necessarily. It's again broader question, not for now. Do you follow family minhag or this? This is not necessarily a family minhag. This is a minhag of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, even if your parents have followed one practice, let's say to give their meiser to poor people, that doesn't necessarily obligate you. Because you're not doing this because of a family minhag. This is a minhag of Klal Yisrael. As we've seen, a very old minhag, a minhag that goes back to the times of Chazal. Yes? Yes. Yes, so that is true. Though some poskim do mention, not that it must be given to Omlei Torah, but certainly that a special, there is a special focus on Omlei Torah, if not for all your meiser, from some of your meiser, and the like. So even though that medrash does mention it, it's not something that must be done, but it's definitely something to keep in mind. Yeah. Yeah, well, usually when you're supporting people learning Torah, they're aniyim, because, you know, I don't think somebody has plenty of money and happens to be learning in Kollel, then they shouldn't be taking money. There's no reason to give them money. Okay, good. So let's go back to some more Parsha things.
Was this connected to Yaakov? Sorry.
Yeah.
How it's so confused.
Because Yaakov says when he's praying, the chol asher titen li aser asrenu lach, whatever you give me, I will give meiser back to you. Okay. I'd like to see, let's see, try to do at least two more things. So take a look back on the first page where it says, v'yu be'enav ki'admim achadim v'ahavaso osa. So this is a piece from the Drasha Saran. The Drasha Saran here is commenting on a pasuk actually from Parshas Ekev. Take a look at the pasuk below. V'ata Yisrael, ma Hashem elokacha shoel mi'imach, ki'im li'ras Hashem elokacha, la'lechaz b'chod rachav li'ava oso, v'la'avod es Hashem elokacha b'chol v'avcha, u'v'chol nafshecha, l'shmor es mitzvos Hashem, So behold, or now listen, Yisrael, what does God ask of you but to fear him? And then a whole long list of very difficult things to do. So the Gemara says about this, it's a Gemara in Brachos right below. Everything is in God's hands, like whether a person will be successful in business or fail or be healthy or sick, except for Yir Shamayim. Why? Because the Pasuk says explicitly, what does God ask of you? Yir Shamayim, meaning say it's in your control, your power. Yir Shamayim means, in a certain sense, everything that's within our freedom, right? All issues of religion, morality, and the like. So the Gemara then asks an obvious question. Atu Yir Shamayim Mil Sadutrasi? Is Yir Shamayim an easy thing? Meaning say it like this. When I use a phrase like this, you know, what do I ask of you? But, so hopefully, what I'm saying is, you know, something easy, right? We all know that Yir Shamayim is not easy. Yir Shamayim is exceedingly difficult. If I had more Yir Shamayim, I would do fewer Averos and more mitzvos. Maybe it is easy and I'm just slacking off. But I think, as the Gemara acknowledges, that Yir Shamayim is very difficult. So what is this lashon that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying? What do I ask of you but Yir Shamayim? So the Gemara answers a fascinating answer. In Lagabe Moshe Milsa Zutrasahi. Yeah, for Moshe it's easy. Damar Chanina. Mashal Adam Shavakshan Mimenu Kli Gadol V'yeshlo. You ask somebody for Kli Gadol and he has a big vessel. Dome Allah Kikli Katan. It's like nothing. Katan Beinlo. You ask him for even a Kli Katan he doesn't have. Dome Allah Kikli Gadol. Then it seems like a big vessel. In other words, Yir Shamayim is a large vessel. It's not something easy. But since Moshe had already acquired that trait, for him it was easy. Now, there's an obvious question here, which the Ran in the source above addresses. And this is what's going to bring us to our Parsha. We call Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbeinu. Why? Because he's our teacher. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu is a master educator. Now, a good educator will recognize what's difficult for their students. I remember I once had a physics teacher who was very brilliant, and this physics professor would get frustrated when we couldn't solve problems, and he would say things like, but it's so easy, right? And, you know, you wanted to throw something at him when he said that. Well, it was easy for him. Right? He had a PhD in physics and was a brilliant person, and we were just starting off, and it was very difficult for us. So he was not a particularly good teacher because he couldn't appreciate that this was difficult for us. He couldn't put himself in our shoes. So if Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest teacher ever, Rabbeinu, so this seems like a very strange thing to say. Moshe says to us, what do I ask of you? What does God ask of you? Ah, Yir Shamayim. It's so easy. But it's hard for us. Okay, for you it's easy. But what does that have to do with anything? For us it's hard. Don't you understand, Moshe? So the yesod is, the answer is, and this is what the Ran says over here, that Moshe Rabbeinu must have been telling us how to achieve Yir Shamayim. There must have been a message in him telling us that it's easy. So let's take a look at the Ran. Avol ein zeh mimashi yiksha. Ki amnam yitachin mashkasavti, bedaver shu kal etzel omro, v'yafshar shiyya kal etzel zulaso. Avol zeh inyan yesh lo teva acher, shu inyan shiyucha kol adem lasigo. Ta'asher hisigo, shofet u'mishpato emes, shu inyan not Kelvin is God. This is something that everybody could achieve. And indeed, once they've achieved it, it's easy. Divchina shekola torech v'amol shetarech lasigo enu nechshav l'me'uma k'neged ha'davar ha'nisgav asher hisig. And that's because it's true that the person had to work incredibly hard to achieve this particular thing. But it's like nothing compared to what they've accomplished. All that hard work feels like nothing. Ad shemi sheyitzayir oso al amitaso, to the point where a person, if they appreciate what it is, will see it as something easy. L'mashal admar davardom, I heard this run first, I think, from Rav Khan, in the Musar Shmuz in the base medrash about 15 years ago. And he gave, he said, he once heard an interview of someone who just climbed Mount Everest in some unusual way. I don't remember what the accomplishment was. And they asked him, so, you know, what was it like? He said, oh, it was awesome. It was amazing. It was so... And he said, well, tell us about it. Well, like, you know, I went up and then I slid down the ice 50 feet and I got frostbites all over my... And he says, no, it was amazing. Because two things. Number one, what the Ron here is stressing, which is that if you appreciate how great an accomplishment is, all that tsar that you expended to get there, still it's nothing compared to the achievement. But there's something else here, which is when you really, really want something, then the hard work that you need to do to get there doesn't seem like hard work. And there's a tremendous mashal of that from our parsha. Kinyan shenemar, vayu be'enav kiyamim achadim behavaso osa. It says that Yaakov worked for 7 years for Rachel, and they were in his eyes like a couple of days due to his intense love for her. Now, we know that Yaakov's work for Lavan was not an easy task. The Pesukim describe how he got frostbitten, he stayed out in the cold, in the blazing heat, he worked so hard, he didn't take a break. But what does the Pasuk say? It was nothing because he loved him, her so much. In other words, when you love someone so much, so all that hard work is nothing. It feels nothing. Just like that guy who got the frostbites climbing Mount Everest. Because the goal is so exciting that the cost doesn't feel like anything. Somebody who loves their car. And every day they go to work and they complain about, you know, I have to work so hard. And then it comes the weekend and like all day on Saturday and Sunday they're like under the hood of their 1957 hot rod. And they're just like, they're schwitzing and they're on their back and they're full of grease and they work. That doesn't feel like work because they love it. It's their passion. And then they go back to work at their day job and it's like, you know, every single thing, it's such a, right? Hard work is dependent not so much in terms of objective criteria, but it relates much more to how you feel about it. Oh. So that is the message that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling all Israel. You want to know how to achieve Yerushalayim? It has to be something that's milsa zutra, so that it's easy. You have to want it so much. You have to be so passionate about it, love it, desire it. Then that hard work will seem like nothing. And the, if you see it as taxing and burdensome and the like, if you view mitzvos as hard work, so then you won't achieve true Yerushalayim. But if you could reframe it, if it could be vayu be'enav kiyamim achadim, if you could make it, you want to know the secret to getting to where I got, to getting to Yerushalayim, it's to recognize that this is easy. Not easy in the sense of easy, but easy in the sense that despite the incredible struggle and difficulty, this is something that's so awesome that it feels like nothing. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is Rabbeinu. He is the greatest teacher. He taught us not just that we have to do the right thing, but he's conveying to Klal Yisrael with this the perspective that you need to have to succeed, to achieve a great accomplishment. Should we do one more Vart? 1 more minute? Yeah? Okay. Very quickly. This is a very sad Ramban. It's the previous one on the Havali Banim. A very sad Ramban. But I think it's a very important thing to keep in mind. So this is, of course, a very, very sad pasuk. Rachel Imenu says to Yaakov, Havali banim vim ayin meisa anochi. Give me children, and if not, it's as though I'm dead. Ramban first quotes Rashi. If we had time, we would read through his explanation of Rashi and his critique of Rashi, but we don't have time. And his suggestion for Rashi, we'll have to start from the paragraph Valderech HaPshat, because we want to do this quickly. Valderech HaPshat. There's Rashi is a drash, but this is the pshat. Amar Rachel Yaakov Shitin Labanim. Uve emes daita lemor shispalo alah. He knew, she knew, that he can't just produce children. He's a person. She wanted him to daven. Aval shispalo alah ad shetitein yitein labanim al kopanim. He should daven in such a way that she'll get children no matter what. Vim ayin, and if not, what does it mean? Im ayin. What's this threat? Shetamis atzma b'tzahar. She's going to kill herself in starvation. Rachel Aminu was so depressed and distraught about her infertility that she said, I'm going to die if I don't have a kid. Dibra shelo kelgan, and perhaps here, she went too far. Bekinasa in her jealousy. V'chashva ki ba'avaso osa yis'ane Yaakov. She thought that due to his love for her, which of course he did love her, as we just read, he would fast. V'yilbash sak v'efer. V'yispalal adju labanim shelo tamos b'tzar. And he would pray that she have children in an excessive way. Obviously Yaakov was davening a lot already. Yaakov was a tzaddik. But Rachel thought that he could daven even more. Vaychar af Yaakov. Yaakov got angry. She'en tfilas ha-tzadikim biyadim she'tishma v'tane al kopanim. Tzadikim can't just get their tfilas answered no matter what. In other words, Yaakov felt that she was threatening him. She's saying, you daven until I have children. And Yaakov gets angry. He says, what, like, think I could force God? Uva'avor she'dibra Derech Gagwe Hanashim Ha'oavos Lafchido B'misaso Chara Apo. He got angry because he thought she was just like exaggerating, trying to, threatening death. Ulekach Amarla She'enu B'makom Elokim. That's why he says back to her, Hatachas Elokim Anochi. Can I? Am I in place of God? She'ifkod Ha'karos Al Kopanim. I could just give children as I wish. Ve'inenu choshish b'davar. Ki mimena nimna privatan v'lo mimenu. V'ze liyaser oso achlima. V'hine ha-tzadekes bir osa shelo tucha lehisamech al tfilas Yaakov. When she saw that she couldn't rely on Yaakov, he wasn't going to daven in this way. He had children. He wasn't going to daven in this exceedingly desperate manner. Shava l'spala l'atzma. She said, "Eina davar talibi," and she would have to do it. Kel shomea tzaka. V'zeo v'yishma ileha elokim. And that's why the pasuk says that Hashem listened to her tefilos, because Yaakov, while he certainly davened, didn't daven with that desperation. And he says, going on, that Yaakov was wrong. Because kach onim es meikos, Hashem says to him, is this the way you respond to dera, to meikos, to these desperate people? Chayecha shebanecha asidim la'amod lifnei vana. Look, your sons are going to stand before hers. Meaning to say that Yaakov Avinu failed to appreciate this level of pain and desperation that Rachel was experiencing. And again, obviously, when we're talking about Chataim of the Avos, we're talking about something that's a very subtle chait, You know, perhaps one time in all their marriage, Yaakov showed his frustration over here. But that was wrong. That was wrong. And Yaakov should have realized that Rachel here was expressing, you know, the way she felt, which is like, I can't live like this. And that's something to, there's a lot to say here. We don't have time. But I think there's a lot to think about in this small Ramban about the pain people experience for various things in life. How we have to react to people who are experiencing intense pain in terms of appreciating and understanding that sometimes people really do feel this way. They feel like they can't go on living like this. They feel like they'd rather be dead. They feel like they're dying, as Rachel Imenu expressed. Okay, so we'll stop here. Be'ezras Hashem, we'll pick up next week.